morning. Welcome to Post Council, March 16th, 2023 at 10 a.m. Post Council is held at the Public Safety Education and Training Center located at 410 West 9800 South on the third floor in the Post Council Room in Sandy, Utah. I would first like to start by excusing Sheriff Kelly Sparks, Mayor Troy Walker, and Sheriff Nate Curtis. Have any of you hopefully have had an opportunity to review the post council meetings? Do I have a motion to approve?
I make a motion to approve, Mr. Chairman.
We have a motion to approve the January 19th, 2023 minutes. I got a motion from
second.
Spence Austin. Do I have a second?
Second.
From Melina Stevens. Those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes.
Oh. Can we do all 3 minutes?
Yes, sorry. Additionally, we have two others. We have the January 31st, 2023 and March 2nd, 2023. Do I have a motion to approve?
I move we approve the January 31st, 2023 minutes as written.
I've got a motion from Melina Stevens and
a second
from Spence Austin. Further discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. We'll now move forward with Lieutenant Jacqueline Moore and Lieutenant Newland to discuss yearly reports.
You need March 2nd.
Oh, sorry, did I not get? I got March 2nd as well, right? Did we not?
No, our motion was only for the 31st.
Okay, let's add that too. We have the March 2nd, 2023 minutes. Do I have a motion to approve? So moved. I got it from Chief Swanson. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second from Travis Noor. Any discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
I'm abstaining because I was not there.
Okay. One abstention. Thank you. The motion passes. Lieutenant Moore.
For the quarter of December 1st, 2022 to February 28th, 2023, Post Investigations received 106 complaints. We opened 40 cases. We did not have any administrative hearings. We closed 6 cases with no action. We received 8 voluntary relinquishments. The first was for rape of a child and aggravated sexual abuse of a child. The second was for assault and domestic violence in the presence of a child. The third was custodial sexual relations and dishonest in violation of policy. The fourth was sexual conduct on duty and lying under Garrity. The fifth was falsification of a government record. The sixth was DUI involving a fatality and false statements. The seventh was lying under Garrity, and the eighth was custodial sexual relations and dishonest in violation of policy. We did receive 1 VR from the previous quarter that I didn't mention, and that was for lewdness. Applications, we reviewed 276 basic training applications, 33 dispatcher applications, and 23 waiver reactivation applications. We currently have 94 open cases and 85 active investigations. Any questions on the quarter? So annual stats for the year of 2022. We received 417 complaints. We opened 135 cases. We did not conduct any administrative hearings. We closed 31 cases with no action. Received 19 voluntary relinquishments. We presented 57 cases to Post Council. 3 of those received revocations, 40 received suspensions, 14 received letters of caution. We reviewed 1,281 applications. 1,051 were for peace officers, 123 were waiver reactivations, and 107 were dispatcher applications. And then I want to go over just a few stats. Can you pull those up? For the last several years. So if you can see, the complaints received has increased dramatically since 2021. That has really dedicated a lot of our time to taking these complaints. We have been asking, our technicians and our investigators have been asking these complainants how they received our information, and the majority is from the Attorney General's office. They've referred them to us. So most of these don't result in an investigation, but it is taking a lot of time. I am looking at ways to mitigate this. If it's a template response to some of these or educating the call taker at the AG's office. And then can you go to the next? You can see cases opened last year and the year before were record years. And then applications. Applications that we're reviewing, we were seeing a trend upward. And then during COVID, we had a lull, and we're increasing applications again. So we have asked for two more investigators. The commissioner got that approved by the legislature this session. So we should be able to open those in July, and hopefully that can cover a lot of these issues that we're seeing. And then I also want to introduce Sergeant Dan Young. He's our fourth investigator. Just started. He works Tooele City PD and Draper PD, and he's got over 16 years of experience. Any questions on anything I presented? Okay, thank you.
Morning, everyone. Start with the quarterly for basic training. For basic training, we had six sessions in this quarter that just finished for a total of 156 officers trained between LEO and SFO. For in-service training, we held 30 in-service classes, graduated 589 officers, enrolled 735. A lot of those were just absences. And we also trained 32 dispatchers in a total of 436 hours of training. Annual reports for basic, we had 365 individuals certified as law enforcement officers. For comparison in basic training in 2021, we had 8 basic sessions. Last year in 2022, we had 11. And in 2021, we had 246 individuals certified. In 2020, we had 6 basic training sessions and 255 individuals. And in 2019, we had 8 basic training sessions and 257 individuals certified. So you can see that we have, just like investigations, we've had a record year. So far, the demand has been a little bit lessened, so which has been a relief for my sergeants. But we anticipate the second half of this calendar year to pick back up. In the year of 2022, for basic dispatch courses, we held 7 basic dispatch courses for 117. And then we also held a total of 146 in-service programs with 18 different topics, and a grand total of 43 officers, attending those in-service courses. Again, by way of comparison, in 2021 calendar year, we had 163, so more actual courses, but less officers, 3,173. And in 2020, we had 95 in-service training programs with 2,200 officers. So again, record years for in-service as well. Any questions from the council on in-service, basic or quarterly or annual? Thank you.
Thank you. Now move to the 2022-23 quarter four curriculum update for Marcus Yockey for SFO and LEO officers.
And actually, with your permission, Chairperson, I would like to actually move to the legislative update first, because it will give us a nice segue into the curriculum update. Thank you. With legislative update, these are just bills that impact Post Council and Post in regards to Post Council. I just wanted to quickly go over some of these just so you're aware of them. Please note, some of these have not been signed by the governor. These are the ones that have passed through the Senate and the House, but we just want to get you guys apprised of these. So when we hit the fiscal year in July, starting July 1, we're good. As Lieutenant Moore discussed, we were approved, gratefully, 2 investigators and actually 1 content developer. That's going to help us significantly. The content developer is going to help us improve our hybrid approach on our curriculum development, which is where we're heading, where we're going to be front-loading our classes with an online portion and then moving to helping these cadets understand a little better, right? This adult learning concept. So we're very grateful for that, and hopeful, fingers crossed, that it has passed, but stuff does happen. So hopefully nothing happens in the interim. We can get these individuals on and we can get these investigators starting July 1. Some other bills that were updated that do impact us: House Bill 43, domestic violence modifications. What it did is it, change the instruction on domestic violence and the lethality assessment. I'm sure you guys heard about that during the session. So Post, what we've come up with is Post is going to develop an online training on the DV issues. So we already have one right now that's offered to all law enforcement. We have that on our post portal. So please have your officers make sure that they look at that. That is currently being offered. And then our second module is one that John Jacobs and our new content developer will be working on, which is our lethality assessment. And then what we do is we actually do a third type of module, and that's for our classroom instruction. But our lethality assessment actually has to be incorporated to all officers. So previously required training, but now clarifies that POST must incorporate training into our basic training courses. So John's going to talk about that. I'm actually going to turn over some of my time over to him. So the training must include information on responding to domestic violence, including trauma-informed and victim-centered interview techniques, lethality assessment protocols, which have been demonstrated to minimize re-traumatizing victims, and standards and report writing. So that's what we have to teach, and hopefully we can get this moving a little better direction. Senate Bill 117, Domestic Violence Amendments. We had a lot of stuff on domestic violence this year. This also requires lethality assessment training must be done in accordance with that previous bill. So it's under Section 77-36-2.1. That section requires officers to complete a lethality assessment at domestic violence incidents. So everything has to be done in accordance with that, and we're just trying to make sure the training is in compliance with that.
You may not know the answer to this, but so that there's multiple different types of lethality assessments that are used in the state right now.
Correct.
This bill requires there to be just one.
Yes, and that's going to be...
How is that going to...
Through the Department of Public Safety. That's not
through us. So the Department of Public Safety is actually developing that, and then we will be incorporating that into our training.
How does that look for in-service officers?
Like I said, it will be an online training, an online module that we'll be pushing out. If you guys have a chance to look at the first module, just for domestic violence, not the lethality assessment one, it's fantastic. We've all been online training that's very boring and very difficult to get through, and you're like click, click, click. This is very it's very interactive and helps the individual engage with the online training, and that's what we're going to be doing. Is once everything is completed, we're going to be pushing that out through the online training modules.
And that's 1 hour, is that correct?
No.
Or is that different?
That's different.
That's different.
So if I could answer that, yes. The legislature did mandate domestic violence for in-service training, counting towards the 40. However, because the officers are going to be required to complete lethality assessments, it almost necessitates training. The 1 hour is actually in the sexual assault.
Correct.
Okay.
And we have that. That's the extra hour on top of the 16. So this isn't, it's not mandated per se, but it is mandated because you will have to do a domestic, you will have to do a lethality assessment on every domestic violence issue. So if you don't understand how to do it, that kind of puts us in a bind. So that's why we're pushing out the module that way. House Bill 2, sorry.
Question on the lethality assessment. Is it also how to do it and the importance of why? I feel like the why for our officers is going to be really critical in doing that well.
So our training will cover both of that, both of those issues. Definitely the why. Like, why is it important? What are we looking at? What are we trying to accomplish here? So, yes. House Bill 297, Victim Services Amendment. This is the one where it adds, so we're already at 16 hours that are mandated by the legislature of our 40 hours to do certain things. This is an additional hour that was added to that block of 16. This was pushed by the legislature. So it adds that additional hour. So we're at 16 plus one, so 17. 1 hour of annual in-service training must include training on responses to sexual traumas and investigations of sexual assault and the sexual abused in accordance with 5310908. How we're approaching this is we're working in conjunction with the Utah Prosecution Council, but we already have an online training developed, and we'll be offering that through an online training. I'll let John speak to that, any additional information he has on that, because he's been working on that. But Utah Code 5310908 requires POST to teach sexual assault and sexual abuse to all persons seeking certification as peace officers. So it's important to know that this is not only for in-service, but all peace officers have to do that, and that will affect some of the curriculum changes that we're going to be adopting. Senate Bill 101, Peace Officer Training Modifications, that's the hate crime instruction. What the bill requires is the director shall, subject to the approval of the council, ensure basic training curriculum covers instruction on identifying, responding to, and reporting on an offense that is motivated by a personal attribute as defined in section 76-3-203.14. We already had this implemented into our training, but we are going to increase this and revamp this slightly so that we can strengthen it on as far as hate crimes. And John's going to talk about that when we talk about the curriculum update. And the reason John is our program manager, so he'll be talking about the curriculum update, because then you guys don't get annoyed and sick of my voice. So works out. Senate Bill 120, Property and Contraband Amendments. That's the recodification of the asset forfeiture. So we currently have, just a reminder to all those listening and to the council, that we have the asset forfeiture specialist certification that is that if your agency wants to participate in that asset forfeiture pool of money that is collected by the I believe it's CJC or CCJJ. I knew I had my acronyms. I was like, wait a second, I'm missing a C. But we do have that training. This now modifies, it just recodifies it and places it, moves it out of Title 24 into Title 77. So it's 77-11B-105. So we'll revise that. But please make sure your officers are, if you're wanting to participate in that program, we do have that training up. We do have that certification up. Make sure they're looking at it. They have to recertify every 3 years. So this is just my plug and reminder, putting it out there. Senate Bill 124 is law enforcement officer amendments. This is peace officer background check process. So it codifies the background check process and requires certain things that agencies are supposed to be doing as far as background check for peace officers. With this bill, so please look at that for agencies, because it does change things for you a little bit. With this, it also adds subsection I, so Romanet, so that little I, to post-investigation statute under section 53.6-11. And what this provides is post is now required to investigate a chief, sheriff, or administrative officer of a law enforcement agency who fails to conduct investigation or submit it to post if substantiated as provided in subsection 6. As a reminder, not providing legal advice or anything like that, but this as a quick reminder, agencies as per Utah State Code 536-209 have 30 days to initiate the investigation if they receive credible allegations, and then they have 90 days as per Utah Admin Code to submit that once it's completed to post. So just a friendly reminder in that case. With this statute and the statutory change, it again hasn't been signed by the governor, but we will need to develop new disciplinary guidelines for such an offense. So I don't know how you, chairperson, how you want to guide that as far as setting up a subcommittee and discussing what the potential ramifications would be for a violation of failure to report, or how you guys want to proceed, or if you want to wait till it's actually signed by the governor.
Myself and Sheriff Sparks worked with Senator Escamilla on this bill, and it's a good bill. And my understanding is the penalty, the first offense, is a letter to your governing body, to the chief's governing body, to explain why he did not report. A second offense, they have to appear before post council, and post council can actually affect the status of their certification. So I don't know if that's been modified since we last met with her.
And I would have, so I can't, unfortunately, I'm not in a capacity to provide legal advice in this capacity, so I'd have you look at, consult with your legal counsel in regards to that and determine the best option in that regard. We do have the post admin code, which is always, which has been effective even before this passed, required that the 90 days that if it was substantiated, they had to submit it. And if they failed to, they would have to appear before this governing body. So that was already in place. It's just a friendly reminder and just trying to get a codification if we do have this. So
if you could let us know when it passes, the governor signs it, then I think we would go back to our to our respective chiefs and sheriffs and probably add a few others on there with corrections and others on that to make a determination what those sanctions are, which...
I'm actually pulled the bill up right now. I think that portion might have been taken out.
Okay.
So the issue you have is that if, with it falling under 53.6211, it has to be some form of discipline has to be given by this body. So by it being added to 53.6211, it has to be added to the matrix somehow, some way, and has to be, even on a first violation would have to be seen in front of this body.
So we would have the same parameters, I assume, from letter of caution to...
Correct.
We'd have to...
And we just need to find out where in the disciplinary guidelines where it fits. Okay. So I'm pulling that up right now. I don't believe that portion went through because I did pull it up earlier, but again, I just don't want to get in the advice of providing legal counsel when... I'm not acting in that capacity.
Probably need to see what the final version is that the governor signs and then get with chiefs and sheriffs and other associations to make a determination what the best route forward is on that.
So be added.
The portion that requires and post investigates in there, I don't see the sanction in there. That might have been taken out.
But it is still something we do need to look at under 53.6211, so we would still need to have some sort of sanction that we need to look at. So
can we have you bring that up when it's signed? We have the
yes,
final version.
We can bring it up at the next post council. I just wanted to apprise you of this and we can proceed from there. Last one is in regards to Senate Bill 124, it also clarifies background check processes, including checks of post records. Law enforcement agencies are required to look into post records and certification records, so please make sure you're doing that. The last one is Senate Bill 128, public...
Can you define that for me, just so I'm clear on what you're...
It just clarifies the process as far as a background check and what the agency...
For pre-hiring?
Yes, for pre-hiring, whether you're hiring a new officer or transferring an officer, they have to come to post and look at their record.
Okay.
Senate Bill 128, Public Safety Officer Scholarship Program. This was a scholarship program for reporting... the main thing on this is they do have a scholarship program that allows... officers to obtain, well, I guess cadets to obtain money in order to advance their careers and whatnot. The thing on this, how it impacts post and post council, is it's a scholarship program and reporting information to post regarding the change of status. So we would ask that whenever you have an officer that has an employment change, a status change, to please report it because we do have to report that. To this scholarship program, and it does impact that. So just make sure you're submitting change of status on peace officers. If there's no questions or concerns on the legislative update, I'm going to relinquish my time over to John Jacobs, who is our training manager.
I do have one.
Yes.
The previous bill that you mentioned regarding agencies must come and speak to post and look at the background checks. Do we have the staff capacity for that? Because I would imagine that not all agencies are currently doing that, and that could be fairly time intensive for post personnel to review all of that as far as for new and lateral hires.
As far as
the background, or as, so I guess I'm missing.
As far as providing that information for the agency.
So that was brought up. We do have... So that doesn't come before the post council, that comes before post. Yes.
Then that's my question. As far as the staff capacity, is there a need for additional capacity, or how is that going to be managed?
Obviously, we would love additional staff.
If you guys can always request additional staff on behalf of post, we'd love that. But unfortunately, as far as fiscal notes, we're already doing that. A lot of agencies are already submitting the information and requesting the information from post. This is just cleaning up those few that are not requesting the information. It's not so time intensive, but it does require a little bit of staffing. We've been able to kind of close it through the ICATA system.
We also offer all the agencies to remote into us. They don't need to visit our headquarters. So far-reaching agencies can connect to us online and view the records securely.
So yeah, we do have that ability. And then another question.
Yeah, I was just wondering if we're going to have a full summary of this that we can send out statewide to horsemen as far as these nuances from
We definitely can. I can get something producing and get it sent out via email. So,
thank you.
Or we can post it on the post portal. So, okay, John Jacobs.
To answer that also, Chair, Utah Prosecution Council, we're scheduled to record their legislative update and will in its entirety of all law enforcement affected bills. And they will be, we'll be posting that on the post portal as training. I think we have it scheduled in June for them to record in our studio all of these changes, but we can put a specific one together. So my name is John Jacobs. I do curriculum here at the Academy. And so we are always constantly evaluating our curriculum and gauging what is the needs and where our gaps are. So we come to you today with recommendations, and this is based on legislative mandates that we have. We've also sought agency input through specific interviews and meetings, and also every time a class graduates, Lieutenant Newland runs a debrief with all the agencies that had officers in our class. It's usually 30 to 60 days out, so it's a really good gauge of how are they performing in their FTO and what can we do at the Academy to improve. So we also sought subject matter expert input. We met with all of the academies around the state and gathered their input on what they felt. We talked to our post staff, and then we also did an analysis of our cadet performance, either through knowledge, through analytics of their performance in skills and testing. And then we're also continuing our job task performance analysis. So we're looking at what is the officer need going into the FTO program. And so based on all that input we've gathered, we have some goals here that's going to result in an increase in training. The goal is first of all, fulfill the legislative mandates, to increase officer performance, and also we've identified gaps in our training that we need to fill. And as a result of this, the officers can be better respond to domestic violence, and not only just understand domestic violence, but also the trauma-informed side. They understand the why and the how and the where of the lethality assessment, and how to better, and then also sexual assault cases, how to investigate, gather the appropriate evidence resulting in a successful prosecution. And then also we've identified with barricaded subjects, an active shooter, school safety. We teach the concepts, but we're getting feedback from the agencies that they don't just have the repetitions to be able to sink in what they're learning. And so, and then also it's been long known that officers and cadets have report writing issues, and that not only speaks to the report, but it also speaks to the ability of the prosecutor to prosecute the cases, especially in domestic violence, sexual assault cases. The better prepared the report, the better evidence, the better presentation results in a better, more successful outcomes in the court process. So in your packet, there's with the post logo, there's two pages with the FY24. And we say FY24 because we normally come to this board in June for changes in July. However, based on the feedback from our satellite academies, it's difficult for them to implement changes in a month based on their calendar and their scheduling. So we're looking to get ahead of this a little bit. It'll give us a better chance to prepare the curriculum. It'll give our academies a better chance to get their calendars and get their get up to speed on these changes. Okay, so for the special function officer program, these changes, if we get a successful vote, it would go into the fiscal year 24. Professional communications. So this is our gap. We know that the cadets coming to us have a gap in verbal skills and written skills, not just writing reports, but actually structuring sentences and being able to have a conversation with a person. And so we're developing a professional communication. This is like an English 101 or your professional communication class you would expect to see in college, where we help them with their written and verbal skills. This is filling that gap in report writing. And once again, this drives up to a successful sentence structure and interview results in a better report, and the better report results in better prosecution of domestic violence and sexual assault cases. And it also speaks to the legislative mandate that the officers write a better report in domestic violence cases. A criminal justice system, two-hour increase. So we're actually moving this over. We have a patrol concepts in law enforcement officer, and the cadets just don't have this basis of what is law enforcement, how do the courts interact, how do victim services interact with law enforcement, how does prosecution, and those basic fundamental things, we're kind of jumping that step in the academy, and we see that in our testing, things that you think would be commonplace to us is not getting well understood. Domestic violence mandate, so we're putting 2 hours in SFO because the mandate is that all peace officers get this training, not just law enforcement. Asset forfeiture, the same thing, all peace officers are required. And then the hate crimes legislation, we're doing a 1 hour increase for just investigations, and then we're also splitting it later into a 1 hour increase in our existing serving diverse communities. So they'll get an investigative side, but they'll also get it on the ethics side of understanding a diverse community and how those crimes impact the community. And then crimes against family is a 1 hour increase because we're adding the Cohabitant Abuse Procedures Act to domestic violence to crimes against family. Crimes against the administration and government, a 1 hour increase. That's only a 1 hour class, and the code is large. And we've talked to our instructors, and they're like, it's lightning round, and the officers are not understanding that. Transfer to law enforcement. So we're kind of doing a balancing act to try and mitigate some of these hour increases. So with this, all this increase in SFO, we're moving juvenile law, proposing to move juvenile law to law enforcement officer. It's more applicable to the officer because they're the ones that are actually citing and possibly arresting juveniles. And so it's better to have that in that training. And then we're transferring from law enforcement officer, and this is based on encounters with citizen dogs. We're bringing that back into, it used to be an SFO, we're bringing it back. And then also the sexual assault investigations. That was an ILEO because of the legislative mandate. We're bringing that back in, but we're also increasing it from 1 hour to two. And so our proposal for special function officer is a 16-hour increase. It takes it up to 260 total hours, which is 2 weeks or six weeks and 2.5 days. So we're still staying within that 6 to 7 week range. We were actually a half a day into 6 weeks, and so this would take it into that. So I will read off the law enforcement, and then I'll kind of, because it'll make some more sense. And then I'll kind of field the questions you have. So in law enforcement, once again, we need returning that professional communications. Now this is a lesser, it's only three, because we know that our continuing officers through the program have already gotten the five. So essentially we're asking for 8 hours of learning how to read and write and communicate on a professional level. So we have five in SFO and three in law enforcement to pick up those that are coming back into the academy, and then increase in existing course. So this is where we go into immediate response tactics, where the cadets were just not getting repetitions, and so the academies were telling us we had to do those repetitions because and retrain them because of the forgetting curve. So 4 hour increase in immediate response, pedestrian vehicle stop and approach 2 hours, hostage barricaded subjects 4. So that whole package right there was based on our instructors and academies talking to us saying they need to get just a little bit more to lock that in before they come to us. And then our child abuse and neglect, we're doing a 2 hour increase. We're actually kind of doing a swap there. We have 8 on sexual assault investigations and only 2 on child abuse. Talking to instructors, they actually kind of have been already giving more time because child abuse and neglect was only 2 hours. So they've been borrowing some time from sexual assault investigations, which involves the child also. So we're just kind of balancing the hours to kind of reflect more what the instructors are doing. And then scenario training, we're just doing a 2 hour increase to just get a little bit more time on the repetitions, a little bit more time on their practice. Okay. So to try and balance and mitigate some of this, we're reducing canine as a 4 hour course, talking to our instructors, the objectives can be very well taught within 2 hours. Trauma-informed sex crime investigations, we're decreasing that too, but that too is going to our child abuse. So we're not deprioritizing, we're just saying we're going to put more in child abuse because it kind of reflects what we're doing. And dead body investigations, this is one that's a 4 hour course. It was evaluated, and the objectives can be taught in 2 hours for a basic officer to know when they come across a dead body, they're going to call their supervisor immediately. They're going to call the MEs. So they just need to know within 2 hours they can fully recognize the steps that a brand new officer would do in the field. Based on feedback, this impact weapons familiarization, that's a 2-hour decrease. That would completely remove that from the curriculum. It's an awareness class already. We don't go to any level of competency. It's kind of like this is what impact weapons are and this is how you could use them. If your agency issues the impact weapon, they're going to give you training on it. However, this is like our shotgun familiarization. There was no competency. There was no learning objective. It was just basically this is a possibility if your agency chooses. We don't do taser or OC spray. So this is another one of these where we just kind of identified that the time, if we could take 2 hours and remove it from impact weapon and give those 2 hours to active shooter and knowing how to, you know, safely neutralize what's happening, say in an active shooter situation at a school or a barricaded suspect based on a DV case, those 2 hours could be much more valuable to the cadet than understanding that you might possibly be issued an impact weapon. And then patrol concepts, that's a 2-hour decrease. That is one of our oldest courses in the academy. A lot of the topics were already being covered in our community policing, and also the rest of the topics will be taken over to that criminal justice class. So there's our transfer again. Encounter with citizen dogs, we're going to move that over, like previously mentioned, and then sexual assault is being moved over, and juvenile law is coming over. So our ask today is in LEO is a proposed increase of 8 hours to 392. That takes it to 9 weeks and 4 days versus 9 weeks and 3 days. So it's just one extra day. Once again, it doesn't encroach into the full week of the academy. Okay, so I realize that was a lot to go through. Like I said, we're always constantly working and evaluating and gathering feedback as many channels as we can to try and make the academy and to make the cadet the most successful. That's our greatest outcome, is making the cadet more successful to the agency. So any questions on any of these proposals?
Need a motion on that?
Yeah, we'll need a motion if you just do this, just I guess just one for both, or if you want to do them separately, either way.
Yeah, we can do them separate. Do we have a motion to approve the proposed increase of 16 hours to 260 total hours, or 6 weeks at 2.5 days for the special function officer program?
Make a motion to accept that.
Got a motion from John Crowley. Do I have a second? Senator Travis Knorr. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Any further discussion? Hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you. Second, we'd like to have a motion for proposed increase of 8 hours to 392 hours, a total of 9 weeks and 4 days for the law enforcement officer program. Do I have a motion to approve?
A motion from second. Jeanetta Williams. Second from Melina Stevens. Any discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Now the motion passes. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
We'll now move forward to open meetings training with Richard Jorgensen.
So this is going to be your annual training as part of Open and Public Meetings Act. The chair is required to give you open and public meeting training every year, and this satisfies that training requirement. Open to public meetings, this is a public body that is created by statute 53.6, chapter 2, actually chapter 1, somewhere in there. As a public meeting, all your deliberations are open to public. The purpose of that is to have transparency and the public can monitor and see what we're doing, also provide comments on what we're doing. As part of a public meeting, notices for a public meeting must be published 24 hours prior to a meeting. Minutes must be taken, and then audio is recorded from the start of the meeting through all breaks until the commencement. The meetings can be closed, and this body does periodically close to discuss the physical, mental, or psychological well-being, which is mental, of the agency. In order to close, it must be a two-thirds of the body present must vote for it. If the meeting is closed for that specific act to talk about the physical or mental health of an individual or the character, the recording can be turned off, and the chair will sign an affidavit saying that the purpose of the closed meeting was only to talk about that. The only thing that can be done in a closed meeting, the only vote that can be taken in the closed meeting is to open the closed meeting. In the closed meeting, then you can discuss the physical and mental health. It's not recorded. It's not public. You can discuss what your action may be in discussions on whether that should be an appropriate motion or not, but you cannot take final action until you reopen the meeting, and then you take action on that. The audio is posted within 3 days to the public meeting notice website, and then the minutes are posted shortly after they are approved. Any questions?
Thank you.
With that, we'll go ahead and move forward with Michael Gadd and our disciplinary cases. Go ahead and start with John Beck. Would you like to go ahead and summarize, please?
Good morning, everyone. First case is John Beck. He's present online. His attorney's here as well. Because he's on the screen, I'll be working on an analog copy, but I'm happy to answer any questions, and I imagine we can toggle if we need to.
Correct.
John Beck, a post-certified law enforcement officer with the Salt Lake City Police Department, was criminally investigated for failing to remain at the scene of a traffic accident involving property damage. He pleaded no contest to the charge in criminal court. Mr. Beck admitted to the conduct in Garrity interviews with both his agency and post. He served approximately 5 months of administrative leave. He was suspended for a day without pay and was transferred to another division at his agency. At the time of the offense, Mr. Beck had 10.5 years of service. This is a Category E offense. The baseline is 6 months. The range is between a letter of caution and 18 months. Post is recommending 9 months. As far as aggravating circumstances, when Mr. Beck was involved in the hit and run, he was in an unmarked department-issued vehicle. I'd be happy to answer any questions for the counsel before I turn it over to Mr. Beck's attorney.
Any questions for counsel? Mr. Beck, you got your counsel here, is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Would you like to start, or would you like your counsel to start?
I think he wanted to go.
Okay. Mr. Beck, please go ahead and present to the counsel.
Thank you for your time. I apologize that I am not there in person. I just want to make sure that the post counsel understands that that is in no way or shape a reflection of the seriousness that I think of this matter and what's facing the decision of post counsel today. I was scheduled to be in Florida about 8 months ago during this time, and it wasn't just something I could change, and I wasn't able to modify this trip in order to be there in person. I apologize that I could not be there with you guys today. I think all of you for your time and consideration on hearing this matter. I'm humbled and embarrassed that I'm here, in front of post counsel, even being a part of an investigation. I started my law enforcement career in 2012 with Ogden City. Spent 6 years in Ogden City working various assignments. I spent 4 years on the SWAT team. Spent 3 years on the Tactical Operations Group, 1 year as the Tactical Operations Group Commander. I was a TFO with Safe Street Task Force for almost 4 years and lead detective with the gang unit. And then at that point, I made the decision to move to Salt Lake. Spent less than 2 years in patrol within Salt Lake before being moved to the training division, where we host our own in-house academy. I've never had a blemish or a sustained allegation of misconduct or a complaint against me in my almost 11 years as a police officer. I could have done two very simple things during this day in this accident in particular that would have, one, never led it to a post-investigation, and two, never led it to an IA investigation with my department. Those two things being notifying Weber County and notifying my department. I was involved in a minor collision. I did pull up next to the other driver that was involved in the accident, asked him to move down to the next available intersection so that we weren't in traffic. I do live in a semi-rural area in West Haven, Utah, north, and I pulled off the next available road, got out of my vehicle, assumed that driver was going to be there with me, and he was not at that time. I don't feel I spent an adequate amount of time on site trying to remedy that situation. Like I said, I could have done two very simple things that would have prevented all this from happening. So I take full responsibility for what has happened so far in the discipline that I've received from the department. I was subsequently taken out of the training unit and put back into patrol. I was taken off the SWAT team that I had spent 6 years of my life working toward, something that I really enjoyed doing and worked very hard to get very good at. I know that if Post looked at my training hours, they would see that I am thousands above the average officer. Everything I've done in law enforcement has never been mediocre. I've always tried to strive to be the best at everything that I could be and do. And that goes as training and as a trainer, and the jobs that I performed with the department. I was on leave during the time of this incident from November 11th until April 10th of last year. During that time, I took nearly a full-time semester worth of college credit hours, took 9 credit hours, and I did graduate with my Bachelor of Science and from the University of Utah in December of this year. So I didn't unuse the time that I had off on admin leave unwisely. I did try to use that time and the time off that I had to continue my education that I have done so far in my career and plan to keep doing. And then in November of this year, I tore my bicep in a work-related injury, and I've been on light duty since. I'm currently assigned to the Narcotics Division, West Salt Lake City Police Department, and I've been screening cases on light duty since then. My anticipation of a return to work from that injury is anywhere from 5 to 10 weeks from right now. But I don't want to. Like I said, I sincerely apologize to Post Council that I'm here, and this is in no way in an indication of how I conduct myself as a person or an officer. Like I said, I could have done two very simple things or a few more on that day that would have prevented this entire thing from happening. And big or small, I accept responsibility and repercussion as a result of this. The incident itself was handled improperly by myself, and if I'm disciplined further, I understand that, and it's something that I accept. Now, I have spoke to my department and what they would plan to do with me if the Post Council were to go forward with the full 9-month suspension or, I guess, a smaller amount of time, I would be terminated from Salt Lake City Police Department. So that is a meeting I've already had with my chiefs. That is the decision that they've made. I do believe that I'm a fantastic officer. I've worked very hard in my career to prove my reputation as a gang investigator, as an officer on the streets. And I do believe that Salt Lake and Salt Lake County is a safer and better place with me working on the streets. But that isn't up to me. So I leave my, my fate to the Post Council, and I appreciate your time.
Any questions for Mr. Beck?
Colonel, So was there a crash report done ultimately on this?
Yes, sir.
So the crash was a reportable crash then? The damage was reportable damage?
Yes, sir. I had very minimal damage to my vehicle. I had a cracked license plate frame. And then the other vehicle also had some minimal damage as well. The charges in court for leaving the scene of an accident were ultimately dismissed from Roy City Justice Court. But obviously I was still cited the day of the accident. So, I think I've covered everything and the discipline that I received from the department as well. I don't think I missed anything there. It was, leaving the SWAT team was something very hard for me. It was something I worked very hard to be a part of and something that I love doing, being involved in those environments and operating at a high level in those situations was always something I prided myself upon. And obviously being removed from a specialty I worked very hard to get into. And then also being removed from SWAT was a hard pill to swallow. But it's, like I said, it is 100% on me, as far as where the responsibility lies. I could have handled the situation, in a very, very easy manner that would have led to none of these things happening and not having to appear in front of you right now. So, whatever comes about this, I do take full responsibility for.
Captain Crowley, go ahead.
Do you know the dollar amount of the damage to the other vehicle was? Besides,
I do not know. I don't know if that would be involved in my in the IA paperwork, but it was very minimum. I think there was some paint, like either a scratch or some paint damage, but it was. I'd been stopped at the stoplight for about 15 seconds. At the time I drive one of the. I was driving one of the hybrid Ford Fusions that don't make much noise or if any noise. And my vehicle had prepped forward as I was sitting there at the stoplight looking down and came to a collision with the vehicle in front of me. So it was a very low speed collision and it was at a stoplight that I'd been stopped at for about 15 seconds.
Chief Swanson.
My question is for post-investigator. So there was mention when I read it of a prescription for Ambien. Was there a tox done on this?
No, there was no DUI investigation that was completed as part of this.
Sorry, to answer your question, no, there was not a DUI investigation as part of this, so there's no chemical test results.
Sheriff Plummer.
Mr. Beck, you said you pulled over and waited. How long did you wait? You say it was insufficient amount of time, but do you have a guess on how much time you waited to this person?
Looking back, when I just did my post investigation with Sergeant O'Bray, we tried to like come up with that number, right? Like what was that actual number that I pulled over? And so I initially, the vehicle in front of me turned on its hazards. I immediately pulled to the right side of the vehicle, rolled my window down, had the driver of the vehicle roll his window down. I asked him if he was okay. He said he was okay. I said, follow me to the next intersection so we're not in the middle of the road. We were at Midland Drive and around 1800 North in Weber County. It's kind of like a busy intersection in a rural area. And if we went, then unfortunately it's not, standard city blocks up there. So the next available road that was west of that location was maybe 100 to 150 yards, but it was unobscured view of where I turned into. And so when the light turned green, I pulled in front of that vehicle, went down the street, turned off on that next intersection. And that's when I got out and inspected my vehicle. So I thought maybe in totality, me getting out of my vehicle, looking at my vehicle to see if I had any damage, and then looking for the driver was around a minute before I had left. I did return to the scene after I got home. I felt like I had not handled that situation properly, and I went back to the scene The vehicle was still not there. There was no officers there. But I should, like I said, I should have immediately called Weber Dispatch, let them know that I was involved in an accident. I should have called my department and let them know that I was in an accident, whether there was damage or not to my vehicle. I didn't handle the situation properly. But the best estimate that I could come up with was somewhere around a minute to 2 minutes that I'd stayed there, and then returned after I got home. So like I said, I got back and it just didn't feel right. You know, it didn't feel like I was handling the situation well. The only reason I wasn't working that day, it was a normal work day for me, is I called my sergeant the day before. I wasn't feeling well, and the Ambien mention was from my wife when she arrived back home after picking my son up from school. She's like, well, the last time I saw him is he went back to sleep at 4 a.m. and I hadn't slept well the night before. And so I woke up about 11:30 to 12 o'clock that day and then went out in my vehicle. So there was nothing in my system, you know, when any of this happened. I don't drink alcohol, so it's just not something that is a part of my life. So,
counsel, do you have anything in addition?
Yes, thank you. I'd just like to ask the counsel to take account of Mr. Beck's past history. This is literally his only discipline he's ever received in his career. I also wanted to point out that for the aggravating factor of being in a police vehicle, he actually pays for the use of his vehicle and is allowed personal use. And so it's an unmarked car. It's really no different than his personal vehicle. And also take into account that it was just a minor accident. He rolled forward and the other driver just wasn't. We don't know what the other driver did necessarily, but we'd like you to take that in consideration. If the council would be willing to give him credit for the time that he was suspended and reduce the suspension to 5.5 months, that would cover the time that he was off. As he's indicated, if it's longer than probably 6 months, his department will require that he resign or terminate him.
Just to confirm, he had one unpaid day, is that correct, and the rest was paid?
That's correct.
So the rest of that he was paid during that suspension, is that correct?
Correct.
And then the removal from the specialty units.
Okay, thank you.
I understand the answer now, but so this happened 16 months ago, and he was placed on leave the same day that it happened. So he was on leave 16 months ago. What part of that time, so I guess this is for you, would count towards the 9 months?
Yeah.
The day, right?
Huh?
Wouldn't it be the one day that was unpaid?
Because isn't it the unpaid? Go ahead, counsel.
Based on our prior discussions, my understanding is you're going to count 5 months because that's 5 months when he was not able to act in a law enforcement capacity.
Okay.
And the pay has nothing to do with that.
Is that correct?
That's my understanding based on our prior discussions.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
So any time would
start when, Mr. Gale? If we impose 9 months, when would it start and when would it end?
So he would get credit for
5 months and the remaining 4 months would start as soon as the order signed.
Any questions for counsel? We have a motion.
My only other comment would be that, like I said, that if I do receive suspension from as a result of this action, I will be terminated from Salt Lake, and so I would like at least that to be known that you know it does affect more than just, you know, being disciplined. I will lose employment with the department that I've worked for and profession that I've worked very hard for in almost the last 11 years.
Is that any suspension or an additional suspension? So you've had the...
Oh.
Go ahead, sir.
Any additional suspension.
Thank you. Yes.
Did he identify himself as a police officer when this bump occurred?
No, ma'am. I was not in police attire at that time. So we drive their black Ford Fusions, and they're unmarked. They do have some lights that are affixed to the outside of the vehicles, but I was just in gym clothes at the time. And so when I pulled up to the person, I didn't say, sir, I am a police officer. Please follow me to the next intersection. I just said my first comment was to ask him if he was okay. And then my second was to tell him that we should get out of the intersection and move forward to the next place that we could pull off.
Okay, my follow-up question to that is this. When you got out of your car and checked your vehicle and noticed that there was a small bump or whatever, why didn't you get back into your car and retrack to find this person that you bumped?
So if you look at, if I were able to pull up, like, I guess, like an overview of where the accident occurred, this wouldn't be like a curb in downtown Salt Lake. There's direct line of sight from where I was to that intersection. I could see from where I was pulled over to where the accident occurred, and there's a few businesses around it, but everything else is kind of farmland and field, and so it's not there wasn't like a lot of area for anywhere for people to go, right? So that particular road that I went down, it goes into like a townhome community. And then that either spits you kind of out on the main road that leads you west to where I live. But there's not like big intrusive buildings or obstructions that are out there that would inhibit my view of where he was, right? There's a business that was being built. I'm not sure exactly to this point, you know, even looking back at the police report where he did pull over, but or if he had just called Weber County. I'm not positive on that.
Was the other driver made whole on their damages?
It was through the city, yes. So I was informed that the city self-insured portion covered the driver damage to the vehicle.
Thank you. Any further questions?
Do I have a motion?
So I'll make a motion, and unfortunately this is a really difficult one to look at, though, but as a council, we rely on the recommendation of the post-investigations and the outcome to do that, and then we make deviations from that investigation based on aggravating and mitigating circumstances, and we're pretty consistent with that. Unfortunately, I haven't heard very many mitigating circumstances here, either directly from the actions of Mr. Black or otherwise, and with that, I'll make the motion that we support the recommendation post.
So I have a recommendation for Colonel Rappage to support the recommendation of post council. Do I have, or post investigation, do I have a second?
Second.
Got it. Second from Dr. Swain. Do I have any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote.
I'd like to make a substitute motion that we suspend him for 5 months, and that would give him time served as been discussed.
So I have a substitute motion from Chief Self that we give credit for time served, or suspension rather, and move forward with that. Do I have a second? I have a second from Janetta Williams. Do I have further discussion?
Discussion on that for the motion. I think he's learned his lesson, and I think in a non-reportable small accident, then I know he has a duty to report to his department because he's in a department car. I think he's learned from this, and good officers that want to work are hard to find, and so I think if Salt Lake City is willing to give him another chance, I think we should do the same.
Second that. So I've got a first and a second. Any further discussion?
Well, to come to that, I can support that motion as well. I hope that the intent wasn't to avoid this completely, and that was the intent of the officer, but there was actually an intent to take accountability for that. The concern I have is I didn't see anything that represented that he was actually taking proactive efforts to take accountability for this.
With that, I'll go ahead and call for the vote.
Which motion are you voting on?
We had the first, then we had a substitute motion, so we'd be voting on the substitute motion right now.
Can you clarify it? Can you state it again?
So
go ahead with the
substitute motion.
Substitute motion that we change the suspension to 5 months, and that suspension starts November 15th and runs for a 5-month period, which would be the time that he was on administrative leave.
So we've got a motion and a second from Janetta Williams. Is there any further discussion or clarification needed?
go ahead and call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you, Mr. Beck.
Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Do we have another one online, or do we have Mr. Nope. Carlson? Matthew Carlson here? Carlton, rather, sorry. Carlston. See no one rising? Council, do you want to go ahead and proceed?
Well, thank you. Matthew Carlston completed an application to attend post-basic law enforcement training. He didn't list any military service on his application, but during an employment background investigation, an investigator discovered Carlston served in the Army. Carlston received a discharge under less than honorable circumstances. During a Garrity interview, Carlston admitted he served in the military and left it off his application. He said he left off the information because he was told he needed a discharge document that he didn't have and couldn't get through the military. However, further investigation revealed that Carlston, in fact, had the proper documentation for his discharge from the Army. At the time of the offense, Mr. Carlston was not employed. This is a Category C offense. The baseline is 24 months. The range is between 9 and 42 months. Post is recommending the baseline 24 months. We're here by way of a default. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Do you have any more information on the less than honorable circumstances of his discharge?
No, sir.
It wasn't just lying on his application, but it appears he was also lying about having the documentation from the military, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Any other questions, counsel?
Did yes, you folks sir. Happen to see that document, if there was anything noted on the document for his termination or release?
Well, we're here by way of the defaults.
I hesitate to refer to anything outside the notice of agency action.
Any further questions? Captain, do you have anything additional?
Make a motion to accept post recommendation.
Got a motion to accept post recommendation. A second from Ms. Liu. Any further questions? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you, Council.
We'll next call Kaylin Goodrich, if she's present. And seeing no one. Kaylin Goodrich was investigated by a local police agency for reckless driving. The investigation disclosed that on June 8, 2022, Ms. Goodrich was traveling 106 miles per hour in an 80-mile-per-hour zone. Ms. Goodrich was stopped for speeding and no other traffic violations. On October 19th of last year, she entered a plea of guilty to an amended charge of speeding. During a Garrity interview with Post, Ms. Goodrich admitted to exceeding the speed limit. She said she knew she was traveling over the speed limit, but she didn't know exactly how fast she had been traveling. She said she was only cited for reckless driving because of the high speed and didn't commit any other traffic offenses. At the time of the offense, Ms. Goodrich had been serving at the Salt Lake County Sheriff's Office for 2 years. This is a Category E offense. The baseline is 6 months. The range is between a letter of caution and 18 months. And Post is recommending a letter of caution. Recently, Ms. Goodrich resigned from her agency. She left the agency after our investigation was complete. January 7th of this year, we're here by way of a waiver. I'd note that this was an instance where she self-reported. I'll also note that under Utah law, if you're traveling greater than 104 miles an hour, it's reckless driving. So she was 2 miles an hour away from a speeding ticket. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for counsel?
That was looking at the data. It looks like it was within about 30 days of when that law actually changed. Driving violation be going that fast.
So it wasn't prior to that?
Prior, it was about 30 days after it changed.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. We have a motion.
Motion to support post recommendation.
To support post recommendation from Chief Swanson. I have a second.
Second.
Second from Ms. Stevens. Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll go ahead and call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Motion passes. Thank you.
Jared Hughes. I see he's present, his attorney's present with him. On December 21st, 2021, Mr. Hughes, a post-certified corrections deputy with the Salt Lake County Sheriff's Office, consumed alcoholic beverages before he drove himself to work for a random drug and alcohol screening. During the test, he provided a breath sample which was above the legal limit for alcohol while driving. He was subsequently investigated and arrested for DUI. He provided another breath sample during that criminal investigation, which indicated his breath alcohol content was 0.139. Mr. Hughes was placed on administrative leave and later terminated from the sheriff's office. Mr. Hughes was convicted after the conclusion of a jury trial of driving under the influence of alcohol. During a Garrity interview with Post, Mr. Hughes admitted to consuming alcohol prior to driving himself to his office for the random drug and alcohol screening. Mr. Hughes was previously in 2014 investigated by Post. As a result of that investigation for driving under the influence, he received an 18-month suspension. At the time of the offense, Mr. Hughes had 3 years at the sheriff's office, and I'd ask maybe for some clarification from Mr. Hughes or his counsel on how many total years he has in law enforcement when they come to the podium. This is a Category D offense. The baseline's 12 months. The range is between 3 and 30 months. Post is recommending 24-month suspension. I mentioned that Mr. Hughes went on admin leave the date of the offense, December 21st, 2021. We're here by way of a waiver for aggravating circumstances. I'd note the high breath alcohol content, 0.139, and the prior DUI. I'm happy to answer any questions.
What was the time frame of when he left, from when he consumed alcohol to when they actually did the breath alcohol? Do we know that?
Since we're here by way of a waiver, I want to make sure that I cabin my statements to what's contained in the Notice of Agency Action. And I don't see the specific time frame.
Okay, thank you.
Right. Yeah, just saying burn-off rate is just it's obviously be a consideration on that as well.
Yeah. Any other questions? Okay, I'll turn it over to Mr. Hughes and his attorney. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Appreciate being here. Nathan Evershed for Jared. We actually agree with the Post recommendation. We think, considering everything in this case, that that's a fair recommendation. We just wanted you to know a little bit of the circumstances of it, and this is why we think, yes, there are some aggravating circumstances, but there are some mitigating circumstances here as well that we believe. And that is that he was not planning on driving that day. He happened just to be home. He was off duty. He's been working well at the jail for 3 years. And to burn off steam, he was just with a friend, and he was drinking that evening. And then he got a call randomly into the morning saying, you have a random drug test that you need to come in for. 12 prior years in the Air Force. And when an order comes, that just kind of triggered. Like, I felt like he felt like he was between a rock and a hard place. He had to report. That when these things come in, this was his first one that he had experience, and he felt like he was duty-bound to go, and he felt like, well, safe enough to go. But he was not driving. He was not leaving a bar. He was duty-bound to go and partake into a random drug test, and that's what happened. So while he's there, that's when this investigation ensues. So it wasn't a choice necessarily that he was making, that he wanted to engage and do this. This was something that he was responding to what he felt was his duty to go in and have that. So without any question, if there's no more questions with that, we just wanted to help you understand the full scope of this and kind of like what the situation was. He's gone through therapy. He's gone through treatment. He's done everything that's been required of him. He feels very remorseful. He's taking this thing into strong consideration in his life, and we just ask that you follow the 24 months. So, Jared.
Just want to let everyone know that I definitely deeply regret the actions that happened that day. Not a day goes by that I don't think about things I could have done differently or should have done differently. At the end of the day, what happened happened, and I just want everyone to know that I'm deeply sorry for the circumstances that took place. Thank you for your time.
your lawyer said therapy. What kind of help are you getting now?
My therapist said that I completed it after this incident. I started seeing a therapist a couple of weeks after, and then went for several months, going weekly meetings.
Are they communicating specifically about alcohol?
It was the underlying issues that led to drinking alcohol. I guess more of the mental health aspect of things, of how to work on my mental health more healthy ways instead of reverting to the alcohol for that.
Any further questions? Go ahead and call for motion.
Move we accept post recommendation.
Second, a motion to accept from Lena Stevens, and I have a second from Sheriff Wimmer. Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll go ahead and call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you, Mr. Hughes. Thank you, Council.
Let's next turn to the matter of Jamie Jubeck. Her attorney is present. Is she?
He.
Yes, thank you. He is not here. Mr. Jubeck was investigated by a local police agency for driving under the influence of alcohol. The investigation disclosed that on September 7th of 2022, Mr. Jubeck was involved in a single vehicle crash. He spoke to officers at the scene of the crash, and the officers could smell the odor of an alcoholic beverage coming from him. He performed poorly on standardized field sobriety tests and was arrested for DUI. Mr. Jubeck submitted to an intoxilizer test, and the results showed that he had a breath alcohol content of 0.236. During an inventory of the vehicle, officers located an open bottle of vodka and an open beer can in the vehicle. Mr. Jubeck resigned from the DNR on September 13th, 2022, and did not participate in interviews with his department or post. On November 14th of last year, Mr. Jubeck entered a guilty plea to the charge of DUI. At the time of the offense, he had 3 years of service with the DNR. This is a Category D offense like before. The baseline's 12 months. The range is between 3 and 30 months. Post is recommending 24 months. We're here by way of a waiver. As far as aggravating circumstances, I note again the breath alcohol content of 0.236 and that this involved a traffic accident. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Please.
Was he on or off duty? Thank you.
I'm not sure that made it into the recording, so I'll repeat it. Off.
Any further questions? Any questions for counsel? You would go ahead, counsel.
Yes, if I may, I just want to relay his thoughts. He understands that there are, aggravating circumstances here. He understands that there's going to be a suspension. He understands that POST is recommending 24 months. He's hoping for maybe a downward deviation, maybe an 18-month suspension rather than 24. And he also wanted to express that he's sorry he couldn't be here today, and he's sorry that he's even in this situation, and he would just leave it to you all.
Any questions? Hearing none, I'll call for a motion.
Motion to accept.
Motion to accept from Captain Crowley. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second from Spence Austin. Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Thank you, Council.
Let's next turn to the matter of Justin Larson. Mr. Larson's present here with us. I'll give him just one moment. Mr. Larson submitted an application to attend basic training at the Weber State Satellite Academy. Mr. Larson's application was approved. He received his SFO certification and later his basic correction officer certification. Mr. Larson voluntarily participated in a plea employment polygraph with a local police department. The results of the polygraph disclosed discrepancies between his application submitted to POST and his polygraph answers. The discrepancies are listed in more detail in the Notice of Agency Action. They include a discrepancy in the number of times Mr. Larson previously used LSD. During a Garrity interview with POST, Mr. Larson said he met a female who would give him LSD in an attempt to have sex with him. There is more nuance in some of the materials that he submitted, but generally speaking, I'll say that he indicated he was embarrassed and didn't want that information known at the time. For that reason, his application to attend basic training did not include an accurate count of how many times he previously used LSD. At the time of the offense, he did not have time in service in a law enforcement capacity. Since then, he's been hired by the Provo City Constable's office, and he's worked there for 3 months. This is a Category C offense. The guideline baseline is 24 months. The range is between 9 and 42 months. And Post is recommending the baseline, 24 months. We're here by way of a waiver, and I'd be happy to answer any questions before I turn the time over to Mr. Larson.
Does that particular constable office require a certification?
I don't know that, but I do
know that they have had employees who have come previously before the council where the council's taken action against their certification.
Any further questions?
Do you know the time frame, like the dates? Maybe I missed that.
Were dates of last use, I guess, prior to employment?
What I think I can say is that there was only one use of a controlled substance that would have delayed his entry into the academy, and that controlled substance was not the LSD that's the basis for the count in the notice of agency action here. Was that a fair enough answer, non-answer? Okay.
Mr. Larson, would you like to present?
Thank you for taking the time to review what I've already submitted. I have a few additional things I'd like to show you if, with your
Please,
approval.
Go ahead and read those if you would.
I have 15 copies of each if anyone wants copies.
You're welcome to.
Just if you present it to the board, and
become public record. It's the only thing you know.
Okay. I'm past that, so.
Just take a minute and review this, and then we'll continue.
I have one more if there's one missing, or two more.
Process electronic health records,
second.
Which is dealing with versus health, welfare, my capacity.
So, Mr. Larson, the recommendation is to go into closed session so we can discuss your medical information. So with that,
second.
I have a motion to go into closed session. I got a motion from Brian and a second from Lynn Stevens. All of those that are not on post council, those in favor, please manifest.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you.
We'll go ahead and go into closed session at this point. We have a motion to go into open session. Okay. All right. That will go ahead and call for a motion.
I move that we accept the post recommendation for suspension of 2 years and also include a fitness for duty evaluation by a clinical psychologist prior to reinstating his certification.
Second from Spence Austin. Any further discussion? Hearing none, we'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you.
Let's next move to the matter of Caitlin Nelson Caldwell. She's present and here with her attorney. On July 19th, 2022, Ms. Nelson Caldwell got into an argument with a roommate and punched the roommate. The roommate lived in the home with Ms. Nelson Caldwell and her family for several months but had decided to move out. Ms. Nelson Caldwell was charged with assault and later pleaded guilty in court. She did not participate in the Garrity interview with her agency, but she did participate in the Garrity interview with Post investigators. During that interview, she admitted she argued with and punched the roommate. She said that her children were in the home at the time of the incident. Ms. Nelson Caldwell, as a result of the incident, was placed on administrative leave on the same day and later resigned from her department just shortly thereafter. At the time of the offense, she had 4 years of service with the Payson Police Department. This is a Category C offense. The baseline's 24 months. The range is between 9 and 42 months, and Post is recommending 30 months. I mentioned that she went on administrative leave. We're here by way of a waiver. I'll note that this is domestic violence because the roommate was a cohabitant and the children were present. I'd be happy to answer any questions I can. Please.
Your question is how it was with an assault conviction.
Okay.
Not, that's right. Not domestic violence.
No DV tag in the criminal case.
Thank you.
Others?
Please.
So the DV in the presence of a child was dropped?
And there was never a charge.
Oh, okay.
In the presence of a child.
Okay. Seeing none, I'll turn it over to Ms. Nelson Caldwell.
Thank you.
And I'll just speak first. Wanted to relay a couple of things about this case. We disagree with the Post recommendation. We think it's quite high when you consider the totality of the case. We understand, for example, that Post believes that there's aggravating circumstances due to children present. There were children inside the home. This happened inside the garage. There's no evidence anywhere that they were actually hearing this or seeing this or had anything to do with this. And so we think that would be an aggravating circumstance that can be, well, that you should all consider. That we believe that's not in that case. In fact, she was never charged with that. Post hasn't even alleged that here. The offense is assault, domestic violence. So when it comes to the domestic violence tag, as you all know, that's a very, very serious issue. It's an important issue. It helps people understand the nature of a relationship. And usually that happens between spouses, it can happen between family members. In this case, the other person was a cohabitant solely because she was a roommate. The reason she was a roommate is because they've known each other for like 20 years. They've been going through the drama of like friendship for a long time. Her friend needed a place to stay about a year before. My client opened up her home to this individual, and then so she comes over, and then she has children, and then she brings her three dogs. And over the course of a year, you know, those things begin to spiral and issues begin to percolate. And then eventually there is this discord between two friends, between these two female friends. And so then this leads up to this moment. And what happened in this moment, in this day, is just it was a one-time incident where she was not expecting, my client was not expecting this former friend to come over that day to move things out. She came over unexpectedly. My client was just in the backyard, kind of gardening, having a few drinks, and just, you know, minding her own business. And then out of the blue comes this other individual trying to move out. And then they know the buttons of each person, and buttons are pushed. And it happens inside the garage, and it's there, and it doesn't last very long. We actually know how long it's lasting because during this incident, 911 is contacted, and you can actually hear during the 911 phone call that this incident happens. It's literally like 2 or 3 seconds, boom, boom, boom. And it's mutual. My client gets injured. This other individual gets scratches, gets redness, and then that's it. And then it's over. So in the totality, that was the one-time incident that happened here. The injuries, relatively low, relatively minor, scratches, redness, with the kids not there, not present. And so what we're asking for, we understand that this is still an allegation. It's something that needs to be addressed. I mean, that there's going to be a suspension that's going to take place. We're just hoping for, there's a baseline of 24 months. Post is recommending 30. We think that an upward deviation in this case is not only not appropriate, but what's more appropriate would be a downward deviation. There's no history between these individuals. There's no history of violence with my client. There's no children that's abused. She was a four-year experienced officer at Payson PD. She was the officer of the year. This is one of those things in the unique confines between a relationship of friends that got squirrely over a period of time, and things just kind of happened briefly. What we're hoping for is we understand that we're not asking for anything like a letter of caution or anything like that. That would be kind of absurd. But maybe more of an 18-month suspension rather than a 30-month suspension when you look at the totality of this case. And with that, if there are any questions, I know my client would like a few things. Yes?
Well, she was found guilty of assault. Has she been sentenced yet?
She has been sentenced.
And what is that sentence?
Well, so it's a Class B misdemeanor. It was no jail. There was what? I think an anger management class and a fine.
Called the
911. It was her friend. So her friend was, and the reason why she called, there wasn't a fight yet, but the reason why she called was she called the police just to let them know, I'm trying to get my stuff out of the home, but my client was like, you're not supposed to be here right now. So the friend,
but yeah,
yeah, she asked her to come back later, and now the garage is closed, and so the individual was just calling 911 to say, I want you to know I can't get my stuff. She's not letting me get my stuff. There was no assault happening at that time. But then her friend came. This other alleged victim's friend was also there. So my client has these two other people that are there attacking her or attacking her verbally, you know, doing these things. And so now she's in this threatened position, like these two individuals. And so she goes and there's an assault that takes place in the next 2 or 3 seconds with hair pulling, with scratches, and then it gets broken up.
And also charged and convicted?
No, they were not charged. The police believed that my client was the aggressor in the case. So she was charged in the justice court, charged with domestic violence assault because it's a cohabitant, and a cohabitant means that you've just lived together. They just happen to be roommates. And then so the DV tag was dropped, so there's no DV tag there, and it was just the assault. So, okay, thank you. Okay.
I am horrible at public speaking, but I'm super embarrassed that I'm even here in the first place, and I understand that I could have handled things so much better. It's disappointing that my kids were there and they had to watch me lose my job over this, and I take full responsibility and accountability for how poorly I handled it, so... Sorry for crying. I'm a crier.
I didn't want to take over if the council has any questions.
Go ahead. I don't have questions for you, ma'am. I'm more of a question is, why is post-DV8 above the baseline on this one?
I appreciate that question. It's something I wanted to address. So if this were an assault between two strangers, no domestic violence, no cohabitants, would be a Category C offense, the baseline would be 24 months. We would seek a 24-month suspension. It's aggravated because it was a cohabitant, and certainly there's a more nuance to the facts you heard. I think there was a question, why did someone call 911? And I want to provide some context to what was said and then give them a chance to respond. The victim had been locked in the garage. That's why she called 911, because she couldn't get out. The last thing I wanted to discuss is this idea of whether or not children are present. In our code, presence is not just physical presence, but it's also auditory. If they heard the fight, or even if they could hear the fight, it's in the presence of a child. And so that's why we've listed it as an aggravating circumstance.
Thank you, counsel. What I would just say to that is that my client avers, says that the individual wasn't locked in the garage. You can see why she thought she was. She's moving things out. She wasn't wanting her to be there at the time, wanted her to come back later. But the individual thought, hey, she's not letting me move my stuff. She's not letting me move from this. And so my client wants you to know that she didn't lock her in the garage. But she can see why the alleged victim thought that that might have been the case.
She knew where the button was to open
it. She knew where the button was to open the garage. She could leave. So,
yeah. Question for Mr. Gadd.
Yes, go ahead.
My question is, was the victim told when she could come back
Yes.
to possess her property?
Yes.
We applied for that Friday.
In fact, the original plan was for her to come on a certain date, which was not that date. Right. She was to come on a couple of days later. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the plan was for her to come Friday. She had come a couple of days earlier than that Friday, unexpecting. And my client just didn't expect that to happen.
Mr. Gadd, so she was charged with assault. This is tagged with DV. Is that because the original complaint was DV? And Post does that?
As Post reviewed the circumstances, it was clear that we could prove by clear and convincing evidence that this was assault, domestic violence. It checks every box. All the elements are met.
Please. And kind of in that same vein, but Post doesn't list DV in the presence of a child as a second count, correct?
That's correct. So certainly the facts are there. This is a judgment call. It's the discretion. It would not change the recommendation. They would each be Category C offenses.
But you did mention earlier that the presence of a child is an aggravating circumstance.
I wonder if I misstated my last answer. So we are, as far as aggravating circumstances, we've recognized that there is domestic violence between Ms. Nelson Caldwell and the victim, and also, separately, that children are present. What I meant to say by that is, if we would have alleged two counts, or three, because it's more than one child here, we would still be all Category C offenses, all with the same baseline.
And she was convicted with this regular assault, simple assault, correct? Right.
Yes, simple assault. Thank you.
Okay, it was a plea then. Any further questions? Hearing none, I'll call for a motion.
I'll make a motion to deviate from post recommendation and recommend a 24-month suspension.
I've got a motion from Sheriff Wimmer.
Deviation from post recommendation for a 24-month suspension. Do I have a second?
Second.
We've got a second from Dr. Sween. Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's next turn to the matter of Kenneth Sheridan. Mr. Sheridan, if you're present. And I see no one. Mr. Sheridan was investigated by a police agency in Colorado for being on an off-highway vehicle during an elk hunt with ammunition in the magazine of his rifle while the rifle was slung on his shoulder. I have committed this exact offense.
Me too.
Hopefully your offense was outside the statute of their statute of limitations. It's not lawful to have ammunition even in the magazine of a rifle while on a four-wheeler in Colorado during a big game hunt. That's even if the chamber's empty. Mr. Sheridan was issued a citation for the offense. He reported the incident to his agency. He paid the citation. It was a $100 fine. The punishment of a fine like that is equivalent to an infraction here in the state of Utah. At the time, he had 18 years of service with the Box Elder County Sheriff's Office. This is a Category F offense. The baseline's 3 months, the range is between a letter of caution and 12 months, and we, of course, are recommending that the council issue him a letter of caution. He's still employed with his agency. We're here by way of a waiver. And I'd just note again, as mitigators, he self-reported, and his conduct would be lawful in the state of Utah.
Do I have a motion? Or questions?
Do I have questions for
council? I move we accept the post recommendation
for
a letter of caution.
I have a motion from Muskies to accept post. Council conditions. Second from Chief Self. Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Thank you, sir.
Because it gives the guy an advantage over the elk.
You'd get in trouble if that would have been on a horse, though. That was the question.
You would have got bucked out.
I've never done that.
Not a horse.
Yeah, there you go. With that, we'll go ahead and move forward, counsel.
For my last matter, I'll call the matter of Michael Van Roosendaal. Mr. Van Roosendaal, if you're present. And seeing no one,
On August 19th of 2021, Mr. Van Roosendaal was investigated by a local police agency for driving under the influence of alcohol. He was stopped for multiple traffic violations. The officer who stopped him could smell the odor of an alcoholic beverage coming from him, and Mr. Van Roosendaal stated that he probably had too much to drink. He performed poorly on field sobriety tests. His blood alcohol content was measured at 0.25. He was placed on administrative leave the following day. He entered a guilty plea to an amended charge of impaired driving. His employment was terminated, and he did not participate with any administrative investigation, neither Post nor his agencies. At the time of the offense, he had 6 years of service for the Salt Lake County Sheriff's Office. This is a Category D offense, where the baseline is 12 months. The range is between 3 and 30 months. Post is recommending 18 months. He defaulted, and I'd note for the council that, his blood alcohol content was 0.25. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I have a question just based off of today's agenda alone. We have three DUIs, and two of them Post has recommended a two-year suspension. Why is this one a 1.5-year suspension, especially given the very high blood alcohol level? That's a great question.
Additional aggravating circumstances and the other two.
And I'm happy to. I think if you want, I can quickly flip through the slides and we can look at those. So here is Mr. Jubeck, where you've got a similar blood alcohol content, but a traffic accident. And then help me out on the other DUIs here. We have
Mr. Hughes.
So here's Mr. Hughes. He's got a prior DUI in 2014 where he received 18 months. So if you subscribe to the theory of graduated sanctions, his needed to move up again, even though his breath alcohol content is lower than these other two.
So it's a year and a half versus a year because of the high BAC.
Yes, that's correct.
Year and a half to baseline.
A year.
12 months baseline on these.
0.05 is really...
It feels like a while since we've had a real breath or blood alcohol content, a real low, DUI, where we recommended 12 months. In fact, looking at the statistics, when you look at Category D offenses and what the council's done, the mean is almost bimodal. You get two of them. And I think what that's reflecting is in Category D, you're getting a lot of serious DUIs that come before the council.
Was this one charged as a...
Sorry. Can I ask a question, Mr. Chair?
Go ahead, sir.
So the offense is August 19th. Wouldn't that qualify under the extreme DUI? Well, so it should have been Class A.
I had the question slightly different whether or not it was appropriate or lawful to let him plead to impaired driving. But as far as the extreme DUI, I don't know the answer to that.
I was
under the impression that perhaps that portion of a bill didn't pass.
That passed in 2020, I think. Above 0.15. We'll have to look at it. That's worth clarifying. If it falls under that extreme DUI classification, I think it was supposed to go to a 5.
I got asked that question as my very first question in front of the council 6 months ago, and totally blew it because I had no idea. But I looked it up afterwards, and it wasn't clear to me. Yeah. It was
a law. I should know that off the top of my head, shouldn't I?
We were home.
Go ahead.
If there's no other questions, I'll make a motion. I'll make a motion that we accept Post recommendation for a year and a half suspension.
The motion to accept from Chief Swanson. We have a second.
Second.
Second from Lynn Stevens. Any further discussion? Anything else, Colonel? I'll go ahead and call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. Motion passes.
That's all I have. Thank you.
Appreciate it. We'll go ahead and now let's see if there's anything else. We're actually at rescheduling for our next post-council meeting.
So while everybody's looking at their calendar, our audio-visual help is not available the 12th through the 19th of June.
Going to July or...
We'd have to
So past 12th to the 19th, they're not available. So it'd be beyond that.
What about the week of the 26th?
Of June.
Yeah. Last week.
Last week of June, does that work?
We could do it before the 29th.
Before the 29th.
28th.
27th.
Yeah, the 27th, 28th.
Yeah,
I can do 27th.
You do either.
How do we look on the 27th?
27?
We're good.
Make that work.
June 27th here at Post Council. Is that work, sir? All right, we'll go ahead.
It was 10 a.m.?
June 27th, 10 a.m. Very much, and if there's no further business, we have a motion to adjourn. Got a motion from Spencer, a second from Kulinovich. Post Council is now in recess. Thank you for your time. Appreciate it.